everybody.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
This is Zach.
And this is Stuart.
And this is a Me episode. This is episode 20.
Yeah, that's right. This is where we kind of talk about our what we've been doing, what kind of media we've been consuming, what books we've been reading.
Yeah, and a lot of these are also going to start being things that we want to talk about maybe for later episodes. See if maybe there's some more stuff we can dig into with certain movies. This is just our gut reaction to things we've been doing that we like or find interesting.
Yeah, but things that don't warrant an entire episode.
Yeah. So I guess I'll start off.
Yeah, first. Kick us off.
I read this book called Service Games by a man named Sam Pettis.
Oh.
Have you ever read this?
I have not.
So it is about Sega as a, not necessarily as a developer, more of as a hardware developer.
Okay, yeah.
So it starts off with them in the era of making like arcade games.
Mm-hmm.
All the way through to the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Because that was the last hardware that they developed.
It's my favorite console. Still my favorite console.
Well, so reading this, so I'm not the best judge because I had an Ouya. I had high hopes for the Ouya.
Yeah, I remember laughing about that.
I think it had more potential than I think the Games Press gave it. I think the Games mm-hmm. Press unfairly treated it like a bad idea rather than something that could have truly been changing to the field. I mean, iOS already had that with developers being able to, but like you could develop games on the Ouya.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a really interesting platform, that I don't think was, I don't think it was given a fair shake by the Games Press, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean,
but
there were a lot of glaring errors in
that. There were a lot of errors in it, buttons sticking and whatnot.
Yeah.
But so I'm not the best. All that's to be said, I'm not the best with determining what a good console is or not. I kind of wish I had a Dreamcast reading this book. Like,
yeah.
Reading about all the stuff that went into it and hearing you talk about it.
I still have my Dreamcast.
Yeah, I really wish that I had it. Is it one of those systems that can be emulated, or is it like the Saturn and it's like
no, it
pretty,
can be
pretty impossible to
it can be emulated, and that's one of the downfalls of or why the
I know
Dreamcast
piracy with it and the PlayStation were just like, oh, I'll just burn this game.
Very rampant. Yeah, they didn't really have any sort of protection hardware features on the game or on the console, so you could really download a game to a disc and then take that disc and put it in the physical machine, the console, and play a game just like you bought the disc.
Yeah.
Which really hurt a lot of sales of games and kind of led to some of the downfall of the Dreamcast.
Yeah. Now, the one of the things that stood out to me were the amount of systems that they supported.
Yeah.
At one time was goddamn ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, Sega did well with their support and everything, where they came out with a lot of games.
See,
and
part of me thinks that maybe they overextended themselves.
They
because
did.
Because the Master System had no reason to be supported in 95, but they were still supporting it.
Yeah.
The Genesis had so many iterations because Sega of Japan just really were very hands-on when they shouldn't have been. Like,
mm-hmm.
they hired Tom Kalinske to do Sega of America because he was a pretty good marketing guy.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that they would not have been anywhere near as successful if they had not hired him. I think Sega of Japan stepping in and micromanaging the stuff that he was doing started with the Saturn, and I think that was the downfall.
Yeah, I mean,
because the Saturn, like, famously when it was announced, the Saturn did not have Sega basically did not tell retailers when it was going live. They just shipped them all these units.
Yeah.
And then it was a surprise when they announced the launch dates. It was a clusterfuck.
Oh, God, yeah.
When they announced it at E3, Tom Kalinske announced the price, and everyone was just like, $600? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Right? And it was it was a more powerful machine, but when Sony Computer Entertainment America's president followed him up, he took the stage and said $2.99 and then walked off the stage, and everyone was just applauding. Like,
wow.
That was kind of the thing that killed the Saturn.
Yeah.
They only supported the Saturn in America for, I think, like 18 months, maybe 2 years. Yeah. And then they shifted gear to the Dreamcast.
Yeah. I never had a Sega Saturn. I went from Genesis to Dreamcast.
Yeah.
And again,
I had a friend that had a Saturn, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
But it was so expensive.
Interesting machine, yeah, but again, the price point. And, you know, the Dreamcast did a lot of innovative things that consoles never did.
It's first online.
Yep,
right?
First online. You could play online games with
Actually,
people.
That's not true. The Genesis, I think, had an online component.
Huh.
I think.
Well, with the Dreamcast, you could actually browse the internet.
Right, that was the...
Yeah. It was interesting because it came with a CD. You had to put the CD in to browse the... Yeah, to, like, sort of browse the website. And I guess it was, like, it ran some sort of weird, like, Firefox, Windows Explorer, or Internet Explorer sort of deal thing. Yeah, which was really interesting. It was super hard to, like, because the Dreamcast didn't come with a keyboard connection. So you had to do
everything
with, like,
typed out.
Yeah, like, picking the letters off of this keyboard on your screen, which took forever. So, like, browsing the internet, that was not convenient at all.
Well, I mean, like, just going back to, like, the amount of systems they supported, like, they still support the Genesis in Brazil, just because Brazil has weird tariff laws.
Oh, that's strange.
All of those, like, flashback consoles from At Games that you can get here in mm-hmm. America are things that Brazilian counterparts have. I don't think they've ever stopped supporting the Genesis there. If they have, it's only been recently that they've stopped. I think in the book they mention it, but I think the book came out in, like, 2015 or something.
Oh, okay.
Huh. But it's a really interesting read. If you're interested in Sega, I highly recommend the book.
Nice.
It does a good job of showing you their arcade backgrounds. And then when they decided, hey, let's make the SG-1000 that's basically just a ColecoVision.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I've always wanted a Master System, but I also don't want to pay, like, $800 for one.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that was, my first one for this week. Did you?
Yeah, so I've got, one. It's probably going to be a little bit longer.
Sure.
I went to, MomoCon here in Atlanta. It was in a con that was, you know, that we did, coverage on. Because I actually got a free pass from a friend of mine. She entered in a costume contest at my parents' basement. They did a couple of costume contests. It was a X-Men costume contest because the new movie, the new Phoenix.
Oh, Dark Phoenix?
Yeah, it came out. So she put on her Rogue cosplay, which is a fantastic cosplay. She actually, like, her side business is she creates costumes for people. So she has,
ooh,
like, a sewing machine and, like, a whole, like, downstairs area where she makes costumes. So she makes fantastic costumes for herself. But she won, and she got two passes. But unfortunately, she had a wedding that she had to go to. So she gave us, or she gave me one of the passes and another one of our friends a pass. So I went there, and it was nice. This was the first time I've ever been to MomoCon, which is kind of surprising because they're an anime, gaming, comic book convention.
Yeah, I went to MomoCon 2 or 3 years when they were... originally it was the Georgia Tech Anime Club, and so
right.
It was in the student center, and it was free, and they had a bunch of vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been to the free version. I haven't been to the for-profit version.
Yeah, so the free version was great, and they grew super fast. they basically grew out of where they were hosting it over at Georgia Tech, and they're now in, I believe, the Gwinnett
Center? The Georgia Convention
Center? Yeah, the Convention Center. Which
was Congress Center.
Yeah, the Congress Center. Which was a nice venue. It really was. But it was a lot of fun. Like, they had a couple of big name folks. They had a bunch of voice actors. A couple of voice actors from Steven Universe, which was really cool. I love Steven Universe. They had Amethyst and... they had somebody else, too. But I forget at the moment. They had a bunch of voice actors. They had the voice actor from Cowboy Bebop, Spike, which was really cool.
Oh, Stephen Blum?
Yeah. It was nice to see him. And the great thing about this, I know sometimes we complain a lot about Dragon Con, but really, it's a benchmarker. I think Dragon Con's kind of like the benchmarker of
conventions. At least for the conventions that we go to here in Atlanta.
So, you know, this con was big, but it was small enough where if I wanted to go and see a popular panel, all I would have to do is line up about 15 minutes early, which was nice.
So, I have a question about it being in the Congress Center,
sure,
though, because a lot of other conventions I've seen that are at convention centers, basically... Mm-hmm. Have a time where they're like, all right, all you people have to get the hell out. do they ever shut... They shut down. They're not 24-7 like Dragon Con, right?
I am not sure because I didn't stay there that late.
Oh, okay.
I know that they had a dance, though, that went from, like, 10 to 1. So I know that they were probably open until 1. I'm not sure if there was, like, a cutoff date where it's like, this is when you have to go. See you guys later. Again, you know, having a free ticket and not doing coverage, I kind of went at my own pace, which was kind of nice. So, you know, I was there for a good bit, but not enough for us to do, like, an actual coverage. Like, when you went to...
Darkside?
Yeah, Darkside. Yeah. I went there for a couple of panels. I went there for a photo shoot. I had my Lil Mac outfit on because it's kind of the easiest of my cosplays to do. And with me not knowing in advance that I was going to go to this con, I thought it was something that I could throw together. And I saw that they were doing a Super Smash Brothers photo shoot, which was a lot of fun. It's always super fun interacting with people in costume. It was fun to meet up with people with the same interest, be it Super Smash Brothers or actual cosplaying. There was this girl who did a great Bayonetta, which was amazing because she had the wings and everything.
Cool.
She had the, if you don't know about Bayonetta, I highly recommend the game, and you should probably take a look at, like, the character design, but... She has guns on her, like, heels, and this person had magnets, and she could, like, strap her guns to her heel, which was really cool, yeah.
That's really cool.
But she was a professional cosplayer, and she had come from Texas to this...
Okay. That
makes sense. So, she had, like, all of her shit together, which was really cool. But it was just a lot of fun. They also had, like, a arcade that they had set up, which was free, so you could, like, go to a particular machine and play, which was a lot of fun. They had video game tournaments with Smash Brothers, with Dragon Ball Z Fighters, with all sorts of different games, like Mortal Kombat, which was kind of cool to, like, look at. They have a vendor hall where they get local people, like, local artists to draw and sign, which was really cool. They had a lot of interesting panels that I went to. Mainly, I went to anime panels as well as, like, voice acting panels. And it was a lot of fun. Again, you know, I mainly spent probably about, like, 5 hours a day there. And it was mainly during the day just to sort of look around, go to a couple panels that I enjoyed, hang out with some friends, and then afterwards... I went and got, like, dinner and stuff like that. But all in all, I think I would probably go back to it just because everybody there was super nice. It was really nice to, like, talk with people, interact with people. And the tickets aren't that expensive because I was curious. I looked up a price for, like, a full pass for all 3 days. It was only $40, which isn't bad.
If you order for next year right now?
Maybe. I mean, I looked at their website.
Yeah, that's probably what they have.
Yeah. Which, again, isn't bad at all.
That's not bad. I mean, yeah, like, I've always wanted to go since they've gone for profit.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how it compares, because especially being in the space that it's at, I've never been in that area. But I know that a couple years ago, they had like 24,000 or 25,000 people going, which is 4,000 or 5,000 more than my first Dragon Con.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm curious to see what that size difference looks like in that space. But I also want to go. I'm always either working that weekend or out of town for something else.
Yeah, and I will say that I think the space accommodated the amount of people who went. Like, I didn't feel...
You didn't feel crushed.
Crushed or claustrophobic or anything along those lines. I felt like I was able to get to all the panels that I wanted to see. And a lot of the panels were big-named people who were talking about, their voice acting experience. And with them having a lot of voice actors from, like, Steven Universe, there were a lot of Steven Universe panels, which I wanted to go to. And that was really fun. I did go to a couple of, like, I guess you would call them fan panels, where the person didn't really have a professional background, but kind of talked about it. And those were fun as well. They weren't as crowded as some of the bigger panels, but it was just kind of nice to, like, sit down and talk to people about, like, theories and fandom and whatnot.
Cool.
But all in all, I think I would probably go next year if I didn't get a free badge or something like that. Cool. I think I would pay the $40, but again, if the price went up, I would have to think about it. But I had a fun time, so it was definitely fun. And again, it was just fun interacting with people. There was a lot of cosplay, so that was really cool to see. There were a lot of, like, interesting cosplays that people had done. It wasn't all just anime. There were a lot of, like, film cosplays as well as video game cosplays.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I ended up, like, taking a bunch of pictures and putting it up on Facebook. So maybe I'll move some of those photos over to the to our website.
Yeah, you probably should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, a lot of fun. I would recommend it for, like, a first con going. If you're not sure exactly how you feel about cons, I would recommend, like, maybe going to MomoCon before you jump in headfirst into Dragon Con, because it's definitely a step up.
So they're similar enough.
They are similar enough. I will say that, there were dances at night, if you wanted to do that. There were a lot of, like, panels. There were a lot of, like, photo shoots if cosplay was your thing. It would definitely felt like a smaller, more finite Dragon Con because, again, their main three focuses were on anime, on video games, and on comics. Though, they did have a gaming room, so that was nice see, too, where, you know, you could play board games.
Or... Oh, so it's tabletop, too. It's not just... Okay.
Yeah, so there was, like, a bunch of, I guess, D&D Adventure, like the Adventure League was there. So you could sign up for Adventure League stuff if that was your jam, too. So, again, it was very similar to Dragon Con, but just at a smaller size than Dragon Con.
Cool.
So, yeah, it was fun. I would recommend it, again, as your first con, if you kind of wanted to see what the culture was like. It's a good stepping point.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I definitely want to check that out. I'll contact them and see if maybe they'd be interested in giving us press badges so we could do a full convention coverage.
Yeah. Because, again, I didn't do the full thing because I was It was nice to kind of go at your own pace a little bit. Exactly. Yeah,
you're not having to catch everything you possibly can.
Yeah, I didn't have to, like, take notes or anything.
Yeah.
That's why this isn't super detailed.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, I'm going to go and check this out. Ah, that was all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so I played a video game. I played, and this is old at this point. It's Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah, that's on my Steam wish list. It definitely looks interesting.
It's really cool if you like open-worldy Assassin's Creed type games.
Yeah.
I know when I was playing through it, I did the thing that I normally do with those games, and I play all of the side quests.
Yeah.
On the map first before I start the story, and so by the time I started the story, I was just
over leveled,
and so it was super super easy. But yeah. One of the fascinating things that they did with this game is they have a nemesis system.
Yeah, that was interesting.
For people that don't know, there's a hierarchy of orcs and goblins that you have a hit list of, and as you kill them, you get some XP bonuses to killing them, right? But other weaker ones that may not have names start filling up the hierarchy until you encounter them.
Yeah.
Right? And or... so if you get killed, if you get swamped or whatever, you get killed, that orc or goblin moves up in the hierarchy.
Yeah.
And now, if it had no name before, now it's got a name.
Yeah.
And now it's got an entourage. So if you want to take revenge on it and you go back and you try to kill it and something happens to you like me and you get swamped and you get killed, it moves up in the hierarchy and it becomes even bigger and more powerful.
Yeah.
So it's a really fascinating system that they've built with that.
Yeah. And don't they like remember your defeats and they'll like have some dialogue with you too.
Yeah. They will talk shit.
Yeah.
Which is makes it so satisfying when you stab them in their stupid face. But no, it's a really interesting game. I'm curious to see what people who are maybe like hardcore Tolkien fans feel about it, because I know this game and its sequel did some things that made some Tolkien fans be like, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm sure the lore is not like great, because you know Tolkien lore is it's very set in stone, so
yeah, and
it's hard to do new things with it
without making
people go that's not right.
Yeah, well, like one of the weapons in this is the Aragorn's sword, Shard of Narsil. It's like a dagger, like a parrying weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit that you're bound to is Celebrimbor, who is the forger of the rings,
I think so.
So he's a ring wraith, so he's actually in the movies, maybe not mentioned by name, but he's one of the ring wraiths in the Lord of the Rings or the War of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
So like I don't know how that particular thing shakes out necessarily.
Yeah, neither do I.
But yeah, I'd be curious to see what a Tolkien fan feels about it. It's got the standard things that any sandbox game like this has, or I don't know if sandbox is the right word. Any action RPG game like an Assassin's Creed has got those same problems with it of if you figure out what, you know, the maximum amount of people who can crowd around you are, you can kind of predict how a fight will go, and so it'll cause you to re-strategize because there's always a limit. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have like 30 guys on you at once.
Yeah.
Like they'll just wait and attack you four at a time.
Yeah.
So you can kind of like fiddle around with that and do gamey things with it that kind of break the immersion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that kind of stuff to it. But all in all, I think it's a really cool game.
Do you think you're going to play the second one?
I mean, if it goes on sale, sure. I've got a backlog of games that I'm working through right now, and being an adult, I just can't cut through them as quickly as I used to.
I hear that. Quit your job.
No. Yeah, I know. Quit my job. Get through my video games.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
I recommend the game if you like Tolkien stuff. Maybe not if you like Tolkien stuff way too much. If you like Assassin's Creed, you might like this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. So I've actually been playing, I guess, a game. It's a card game, Magic. I started playing some Magic on Magic Arena. Originally, my views on the Magic Arena was not that great. I got into the beta, so I was able to, like, play in the beta, the closed beta, and it just, it wasn't for me, exactly. But they've changed some things up, and I decided to give it another chance. So, a new set has been released. It's the core set of 2020. So, I decided to jump in and do a couple of sealeds. Like, sealed pools where you get so many boosters and you build a deck out of the cards that you got from those boosters. And with the changes that they've made, it's actually, it's growing on me. It's growing on me, and I'm enjoying a lot of the more limited stuff, where you get to, like, make decks out of boosters. I haven't played any of the standard, where you basically make a deck out of the cards that you've collected, because I haven't really been playing it much, and I don't have that many cards to, like, make a competitive deck. But nonetheless, the limited stuff has been fun. They've changed their economy, where it was kind of expensive to play sealed or play drafts, but
so you have to actually pay money.
You do have to pay money. Yeah. So at first, their economy was really expensive. Like, I think you ended up having to play like $7 to get a couple of games in.
Jesus.
Yeah, which wasn't that great. But now they've changed it and they've lowered the price. So I've only paid like $3, and not to toot my own horn, but I'm kind of okay at Magic. Definitely check out that Let's Play. I'm guessing, yeah.
It'll be up.
Yeah, so check it out. I do make a couple of mistakes, so I'm sure that you can comment in the bottom of the video about what mistakes I made. But it's fun, and since you win, you can actually gain, like, the gems that you have to buy back. So I haven't invested that much money into it, and it's still fun. Like, this set is has been pretty fun. It's the newest one, so you're kind of learning about what cards are powerful and what cards aren't powerful. But I'm enjoying it. I'm actually enjoying it much better than Magic Online, which was their previous, like, it's still there, it's not gone, but it was their previous iteration of playing Magic Online.
Cool.
Which is a lot more expensive than Magic Arena. Like, if you want to play a draft, that ends up costing you, like, $10 for just one draft.
That's insane.
Yeah. Where if you want to, like, do some sealeds or drafts on Arena, all you have to do is pay, like, $3. And you might get some of that money back. So,
I mean, that's not a bad investment if you're good at Magic.
Yeah, yeah. So, Arena's kind of growing on me a little bit. I don't think it's going to be something that I play often.
Sure.
You know, this probably will be my first time playing in, like, a bunch of months, and I probably won't come back to it until, like, a new set comes out or something like that. But nonetheless, it was fun, and, you know, they've really fixed a lot of things, so the UI is much better now.
Cool.
But yeah, and that's what I've been doing.
Okay, cool. So one of the movies that I watch, because I watch a lot of movies, is Observe and Report.
Nice.
Did you ever see this when it was out in theaters?
I did not.
So this is the one with Seth Rogen as a mall cop. I remember trailers for this movie and going, oh, that looks like a dumb movie. Whatever. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
This movie is not all what the trailer made it seem.
Oh, interesting.
Not, I mean, not in a good way. Like, it's, I mean, it's, so it's not what I was pitched.
Yeah.
It's an interesting drama movie, and I feel like them having Seth Rogen in it undercuts it. Like, he does a good job, but I feel like the writing, they could have treated it like the drama that I feel like it's intended to be, and not have, like, a character who is messing with him, because he's ultimately a loser, right? Yeah. Like, he's, like, super militarized and, like, but he's a mall security guard.
Yeah.
And he can't make it as a cop, and so when he's trying to become a cop, like, the detective who's investigating this serial flasher that's at his mall fucks with him and puts him in a really dangerous area of town and just leaves him there.
Oh.
And so, like, it turns out, yeah, like, he does some, makes some racial prejudgments that are probably not, like, granted, this movie is, like, from 09 and humor was very different. But, like, I mean, you can't just assume everyone of a certain race is a criminal.
Yeah, that's stereotyping.
It's stereotyping, it's profiling, and then, like, he gets out of it okay because he, like, kills someone? But, like, it's a really dark movie. Like, his character, his, and at this point, I was just only half paying attention, granted. But, like, he has this crush on the makeup or the makeup counter woman or the jewelry counter woman. And she doesn't really like him because he is a moron and a loser. And he ends up, like, going out on a date with her that she forgot she scheduled with him. And so she's really drunk when the date starts, continues to drink, and then he has sex with her even though he's sober.
Oh.
It
with no consent.
Yes. It's not at all the type of movie it was advertised as. They leaned very heavily into the, like, Paul Blart. Like, this is set, this is an R-rated Paul Blart. And it's like, I'm watching it, and it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just really fucked up. Like, it's, I can't say it's bad, because it's got parts that are well written.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make a good drama movie, but then they undercut themselves by doing these stupid, like, bro humory type pranks and stuff in it that, I don't know, take it or leave it.
So, would you recommend this movie?
If you're a person who likes really fucked up dark comedy type thing, like, I hesitate to even call this a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a drama that has some fucked up humor in it.
Because I'll say this is probably not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you probably would not have a good time with this movie. So, yeah, I don't know who this movie is for.
Oh, okay.
Maybe if you're a hardcore Seth Rogen fan. I mean, I can see some strengths in this movie as a piece of media, but I don't know if I could recommend it to anyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the lighter side, I went and saw Toy Story 4.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was actually, so I've seen all the Toy Stories. And so Toy Story 3 is probably my favorite, and still probably my favorite Toy Story. And I was interested to see what was going to happen with Toy Story 4, since Toy Story 3 kind of wraps things up really well. And I was interested to see what kind of story that they were going to tell on Toy Story 4. And I was very pleasantly surprised that they did have a really good story to tell. I don't feel like it was ham-fisted at all. It was really great to see some of the characters. I will say, in the movie, because again, I'm not going to give any spoilers or anything, it's mainly Woody-focused. So a lot of the other characters don't get as much screen time as Woody does. But it's a nice, I'm glad that they do focus on Woody, because it's a nice story to tell. And it was really interesting to sort of see how, or what their situation was when Andy left them to Bonnie, which was the new kid, which I guess is kind of a spoiler to Toy Story 3, but Toy Story 3 is a, has already been out, so
yeah, it really sucks when Bonnie dies, right? I haven't seen it. That is probably not a spoiler. I have not seen it.
No, that's an anti-spoiler. That's a psychological trick right there. No, she doesn't, because she's like, you know,
yeah,
a 4-year-old and she's the new kid. But yes, it was a good story. I'm glad that they told it. There's definitely, I was laughing, like, so a lot of the older Toy Stories kind of focus more on, I guess they have very bigger emotional grabs on you.
Sure.
Where, you know, they give you the feels and, you know, it's nice. But I think with this Toy Story, they focused more on humor, which was great because, you know, I was laughing a lot. They tell a lot of good jokes. There's a lot of good riffs and everything like that. And of course the ending is a little bit, or not a little bit, it is very touching, but this movie is more focused on humor, which was nice because it's a little bit of a deviation from the other previous movies.
Cool.
I would highly recommend this movie. It was a great movie. Again, I was kind of coming in a little cautious because I wasn't sure exactly what the story that they were trying to, what the story was going to be, since, again, they wrapped it up and everything like that on Toy Story 3. But I'm glad that they did tell this story. And I'm glad that, you know, they did focus on Woody. And I recommend it. Especially if you're a Toy Story fan, I highly recommend it. But if you're interested in it, like, if you haven't seen 3, go and watch 3 and then probably watch this movie as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Zach.
Well, no, just to comment on Toy Story 4,
mm-hmm.
One of the things, that, and this isn't a spoiler at all because, like, it's in the trailer.
Okay.
But one of the things I'm interested to see with it, because I do plan on seeing it at some point. I have not seen 3.
Mm-hmm.
But with 4, the story, it looks like, is that there's a new character called, Forky.
Yep.
That's a toy that the little girl creates. It's got like pipe cleaner arms and googly eyes.
Yes.
And it's interesting to me that it's like they're answering like a bullshit session question that, like, you know, college students might have of like, well, what's a toy, man? Like, is it just corporate capitalist toys?
Yeah.
Or is it anything that's a toy that, it, like, if you stuck toothpicks in a potato, like, would that become a toy? And apparently...
And it's interesting because Forky does have, like, this moment where he's like, I'm trash. I need to go into the trash. Like, he doesn't think that he's a toy.
Wow.
He thinks he's trash. So there's a part of the arc where Woody's kind of explaining what being a toy is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it does kind of, like, explore that space.
So I'd like to see that. Another thing that popped up...
And again, I don't think that's a spoiler because it's... It's
yeah, it's in the trailer. Like they leaned heavily into like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
but one of the things that popped up in a podcast that I listened to that, because, you know, admittedly I'm very much a lefty, is that apparently right-wing shitheads are boycotting this movie and spreading a bunch of like, don't take your kids to see this movie type stuff, because they say that Forky is a way for the quote unquote liberal media to get like trans rights activists in your kids' faces with Forky. Did you get the sense?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not get
that.
That
just
sense
came
at
up
all.
In a podcast I listened to about how these people are dumb and they're shitheads.
Yeah,
and
that's
that they're trying
so
to do this. That's
far from the idea.
Yeah.
Like, they must have been reaching very hard
the
for that idea.
The audio clip from the video that this guy played, like, it sounds like this guy has not seen, like, he's just, like, they're describing it on the podcast and they're like, yeah, he's literally in this video just standing in front of this movie poster and, like, making all these prejudgments on this movie that's
pretty ridiculous.
Is ridiculous. Yeah. So,
I will say...
I know this went off on a way you probably were not wanting to talk about, but it just popped into my head with Forky being an interesting idea.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting idea in the vein of, what's a toy, what's not a toy.
Right.
Also, they reintroduce Bo Peep, which is...
I've seen that.
Great, yeah. And she is a strong female character, and it's really cool.
She was gone from the third one, right?
Yeah, she was gone from the third. I think she's also gone in the second.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting that they reintroduce that character, and it's really cool what they do with her character. And I think that, yeah, her presence on the movie is really cool, and it's yeah, it's really interesting what they did with her. And again, no spoilers, or we're trying to stay away from spoilers, but I highly recommend this movie. This movie, you know, made me feel, which is great, and it made me laugh, which is great. Those are two check-offs on my list when going to see a movie.
Awesome.
I have a big list, so those aren't, like, the only criteria.
Yeah, but, I mean, those are ones that you care about.
Yeah, I enjoy going and, like, seeing a humorous movie, and I enjoy, like, feeling something. I'm glad that, you know, media can make you feel certain different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so my wife and I watched, because it's on Amazon Prime right now, so if you have Prime, it should be free, Hereditary. I don't know if you remember that horror movie coming out.
Yeah, I do remember some of the previews for it. But again, you know, I do enjoy horror movies. I enjoy getting scared, but they're not on my, like, top tier list.
So this is a movie that, unfortunately, I think I want to put on a list of potential topics maybe to cover in the future.
And I'm more than happy to watch some scary movies. You just have to be there so I can hold on tight.
Okay, sure. No, I mean, it'll be like a repeat of The Grudge when we saw that.
God, that scared the crap out of me.
I had you next to me just, like, cowering. I was like, oh, is this what college is? This must be what college is. But no, Hereditary, like The Grudge, is very good. Do you remember the trailers?
Yeah. It was like in a scary house, an old house.
Yeah, so it's pitched as it being a spooky haunted house movie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't listen to that at all.
Okay.
Like, just go into the... I'm not going to spoil this movie. I think if I say too much about it...
Yeah, especially if we're going to
it's a spoiler.
It. Yeah.
It's very well done, very well acted, and it's very well written.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how... I'm curious to see how rewatchable it will be if we decide to do this in the future.
Yeah.
Because it's not like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, but it's in that, like, there's a twist at the end.
Yeah.
But
with most horrors, there is some sort of twist.
There is some sort of twist at the end, but, like, I feel like this was marketed in a way that when you see it in theaters, there's a bigger impact because you're not expecting it.
Okay.
So in a rewatch, I want to see, is this actually as good as I remember it? Or is it because of I had a surprise pulled at the last second on me?
Yeah, kind of like M. Night Shyamalan's movies where when you rewatch them and you know the twist at the end, you're like,
Because it's his shtick.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really cool. It made me really nervous to be at work late at night for a variety of reasons. But there's a lot of things that happen in it that, you know, like I really care a lot about writing and what goes into making a good movie. Mm-hmm. And like to the point that, you know, I'm not a screenwriter, but like I've read books on like, this is how a screenplay is made. These are the things and structures that should be in a screenplay or a good story. Things like that.
Huh.
I'm sure things that you covered in your creative writing.
Yeah.
Courses.
Though we were focused more on like, you know, writing books.
Yeah. Like stories.
Yeah. Stories. Rather like than, telling stories and stuff like that.
Right.
Because, you know, the structure of telling a story in a book is similar to a structure telling in a, in like a play or a movie or something along those lines.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I need to find if there's any way for me to get a copy of the script online. Because, again, I feel like a lot of the surprises are because of the marketing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things they do in the structure of the movie that it's just like, okay, I did not expect that because you don't do that in a movie. What the hell?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there were several times that I was taken completely off guard because I was just like, oh, that's not something that should happen in a movie.
Yeah, I would be interested in doing that movie for this podcast okay. or something. Yeah.
Well, then I'll leave it at it was enjoyable and I liked it.
I'm guessing you're recommending it.
Yeah, I recommend it. It remains to be seen how rewatchable and classic it will be, or if it will be an interesting outlier of like, oh, this did some things that were not expected, but ultimately it's an okay movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And did you have anything else?
That's it for me.
Okay, so my last thing, because I know we're running a little bit long, is I watched a movie that I think I covered me reading the book in a previous me from a while ago.
Yeah.
Called High Rise. And it's a movie. It has Tom Hiddleston, or as my wife refers to him, as Hiddle Bay. The book is based on the movie is based on a book by J.G. Ballard called High Rise that's really this, like, socialist screed against the dangers and pointlessness of class systems and capitalism. Mm-hmm. It's all set in a high rise in England. I think J.G. Ballard is actually English, so they may be supposed a lot. But in the book, everything takes place in a high rise and a class war breaks out because the people who are living in the lower levels of the high rise don't get as much attention as the people who live at the top levels of the high rise. And so there's this weird, like, dystopian undercurrent in the book. And so, like, the book starts off, like, on page one where the narrator is talking about how, like, it's after this war has happened. And the rest of the book is piecing it together. Like, this is what happened there.
Yeah.
But, like, the first page of the book, the narrator is talking about having killed his upstairs neighbor, therefore higher, the person in a higher social strata, having killed their dog and how he's currently roasting it and eating it a campfire that he's built in his apartment. Because, like, everything's dingy and no one's leaving because, like, there's a grocery store in one of the levels of the high rise. Like, there's no reason to leave. Like, his offices, I think, because he's a doctor, I think, in the book, if I remember right. Like, his offices are in the high rise.
Oh, okay.
Like, so it's one of these, like, it's a high rise version of, like, Atlantic Station.
Yeah.
Like, any planned community where there's housing and also stores.
Mm-hmm.
The movie does a really good job, I think, of adapting and making sense of, again, what is essentially a socialist screed.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, I don't think my wife was as impressed with the movie as I was. I really like it. I think it does the really good thing that sci-fi does and gives you a disquieting feeling of, like, this is not normal.
Yeah.
This is, like, it's got a deeper point than just, like, look at these space lasers. Pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew.
It's another one that I wouldn't mind covering. Maybe as a book club in the future, but maybe as the movie, because I mean, I know with the book clubs, I tend to, if there's already a movie, tend to watch the movie as well. But yeah, it's a movie that I think there's some deeper things we can pull from it. I highly recommend it.
All right.
I highly recommend the book.
Nice. Yeah, maybe we'll do it.
Okay. So, with that, our Nerd Fight is going on Facebook.
Yeah, check us out.
The Facebook also has a list of conventions we'll be going to as we get approvals.
Check that out.
So check that out. And the book club book is Dr. Sleep.
Yeah. And, check that out when it comes out.
Yeah. Should be coming out next week, but we'll see what order these come out when I edit them. they may go out in terms of length.
Yeah. We'll see.
But we'll see. With that, we will see you next week.
Yeah. Be kind and rewind.
Stay golden, pony boys and girls.
Later.
Bye.